Hello and welcome back to Here's to Your Health, where we connect community to care. And in this segment, we speak with our special guest. And our special guest is Audrey Miller. And Audrey and I have been connected through kind of the internet, social media for a number of years. And we actually sat down and met each other face to face just before the holiday time. So it was quite lovely. And as we talked further, it was probably well overdue to have Audrey come on to the Here's to Your Health radio show. She is the founder and managing director of an organization called Elder Caring Inc. And it's a national consulting company dedicated to delivering comprehensive health and wellness solutions. We all are starving for solutions when it comes to health care. She helps Canadian families with elder care concerns. Again, something very much needed within our country for sure. As a social worker by practice, she also has many certifications that help her become the expert in the field that she is in. She has a certificate in rehabilitation counseling or a certified rehabilitation counselor, as well as life care planner. And she also, I believe, has the expertise to help people from all walks of life and get to that next step, or at least have a place to go to ask those questions. She also has a very unique role that I think we're all going to learn a little bit about, but she is an expert witness with the Ontario Supreme Court. So, Audrey, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining us. And we always have our guests kind of tell a little bit of a story about themselves, their passion, and why they do what they do. So please share with us.
Thank you. Well, very glad to be here. And as you say, we're all connected electronically for such a long time. So it was very nice to meet you, and glad we finally got this going. Yeah, you're right, Jackie. Everybody has a story, and I'm no different. I suppose it started for me in the early 80s. I finished school as a social worker, a master's degree in social work as well as a bachelor's degree, and started right off working for the Ministry of Community and Social Services as a rehabilitation counselor. So while I'm trained as a social worker, my heart is in rehab, which means I'm always looking at what people can do rather than what they cannot do. The focus is on function. And I spent many, many years working within the government and then working privately, helping individuals who had been either injured in a car accident or had a congenital birth defect or some other acquired injury to help figure out what it is that they could do and help move them forward. I followed a case management model to do that. And like everybody else, I have aging parents. And very early on, my dad was a very complicated diabetic and died at age 69 with every complication that there exists with diabetes. Yet my mother-in-law recently passed away at 96. So going backwards, I always knowing that health and disability were not necessarily one and the same, right? Again, looking at what you can do, not what you can't do. Mm-hmm. And in 2004, I decided to change my focus to working with families who were dealing with elder care concerns. I find that this is a very important area that really demands professional attention. We're all doing it, and we're all doing it as best as we can. But mistakes can be costly to the family, both emotionally and financially. And so it was with that intent in mind, to be able to provide the same kind of professional coordinated approach to service delivery that I had been providing to other families in the community, to focus on working with seniors and their families, and then also to help organizations who were dealing with elder care concerns move forward. So that's my story in a nutshell. Elder Caring was born in 2004 and very, very quickly had to become a national company, as I was very much aware of the struggle that employed carers were facing. And so it was an attempt to be able to offer this kind of care management resource to organizations who were dealing with the presenteeism, which, as you know, is being present and accounted for, but being somewhere else. Like, I didn't hear from Mom this morning. I wonder if she's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Or how am I going to reach that doctor when, you know, I know he's busy and I don't have a moment to call. So being present but being preoccupied. Or, of course, large businesses losing a lot of time and productivity with absenteeism. Carers who cannot be at work for a variety of reasons because life demands from them other things.
So, you know, I think you have described a very big part of our population. And, you know, from Bayshore's perspective, you know, we really see a lot of those folks. Those are the folks that are calling us, the sons and the daughters of aging parents that are saying, you know what, I don't know what's going on.
Exactly.
And I can't afford to take any more time off of work. I can't, you know, even put a number to how many times I hear that from sons and daughters. But so, you know, let's kind of start at the beginning, Audrey, and talk a little bit about exactly what elder caring is so that people can get a better perspective, because I'm sure you've tweaked people's interest in what you said, because there are a lot of us in that same situation.
Elder Caring is a geriatric care management company. And basically what that means is that I have a team of social workers, occupational therapists, and other allied health folks working with families. So it's the professional consultation of sitting down with a family and trying to figure out how things are going and how do we ensure that mom is living as well as she can. So much of the time, the struggle is about putting siblings on the same page for a plan of care, and we lose sight of that. Our lives are complicated, and so the role of the geriatric care manager, and again, that might be either a registered social worker or a registered occupational therapist in the province of wherever they might be practicing, being able to sit down and objectively assess and understand and provide explanation and really that plan of care. The plan of care becomes key. We are going into the home. We are sitting down at the kitchen table in a very non-threatening way, and we're chatting. How are things going? What we find is that people have fears, they have misconceptions, and they have their own challenges. So to be able to provide education, for me, is empowerment, right? I always feel that people have to understand what the options are for them and have it understood and explained in a non-threatening way so that they can make informed choices. And the choices start with, what am I going to need today? And what am I going to need tomorrow? And what do I need to think about longer term? You know, life is complicated, and we people are complicated, but our medical histories are also complicated. So what's very important is understanding if whatever that disease process that might be going on or the health issues that that person is facing, is it a short term? Is it recovery from a broken hip or a UTI, a urinary tract infection? And Jackie, you well know, you know, a UTI can cause a delirium and mm-hmm. change the life of that person and the family, saying, oh my goodness, this is a different person. Yet the good news is, with the right course of antibiotics, that person's baseline should go back to where they were. So it's understanding, is it a short-term issue for caregiving that I'm looking at, or is it a progressive disease or a degenerative disease, which is going to take the next 20, 30, 40 years, right? So the planning process is a challenge, but so critical because there's so many components. And, of course, finance is a huge one, which I'm sure we'll talk about, but it's more than finance. It's the emotional strain and the challenge to ensure a coordinated approach that your mom, your dad, is living as well as they can.
And, you know, I think that the issue really stems from individuals and families, you know, getting together and having those conversations but it's avoided.
Sure.
As you said, there's fear. You know, it could be one-sided. And, you know, and that's the challenge. And so knowing that there's organizations or individuals out there that can help with that process, because it's a crisis situation that is not the time for people to learn about their options. They don't have the time to do that. So if you have that plan in advance, you've sat down, you've had the conversation, and in some cases, you may even need, you know, the referee in the house, because, you know, it can get very difficult, very challenging. And sometimes people don't even know the wishes of their loved one and their family members. And so, you know, it could be very shocking as well. So, you know, I think that there's great benefit in having that medium with your organization and the individuals, and knowing that they're professionals and that they're trained to do that.
You know, you raise a number of excellent points, and one of my favorite expressions is the only normal families are the families you don't know. So, you know, give that a second to sink in, which means we all have our histories, and it's very complicated. And I can say to you, Jackie, my mother can still push my buttons. Okay? That's the reality. In most families, someone is going to push somebody else's buttons. And so having somebody who's not within, but who's that professional, objective expert who can be outside, is able to massage and smoothly and carefully help direct. Because, as you know, what happens within many families, caregiving falls on the shoulders of typically one person. And it could be the person who lives closest. It could be the adult child who's not married. You know, there are a whole number of variables. But ultimately, what we hear is that families, one of the issues within families is that caregiving responsibilities aren't shared. So it's a matter of putting it forward. And we each can contribute to our own abilities. That's the bottom line. Not everybody has the same wherewithal, has the same resources, has the same flexibility to be able to be involved. Yet when you sit down together, one can be able to make a plan to say, fine, I can do the early morning check-in, or I can go to the doctor's appointments. However, I need some extra support with the meal preparation, for example. Or can you come and spend the weekend to give me some respite? So it's, you know, I'll just tell you a little interesting story, if I may. You know, I was sitting with a family, and it was a 65-year-old woman with her mom who had advanced Alzheimer's. And, you know, it was a typical issue. She said, I don't know what to do. I'm fighting with my brother. We're trying to figure out what to do for my mom. And every time I hire a caregiver, he fires her. So there I am without any care in the house, and it falls to me. And she turned to me and said, can you change my relationship with my brother? And I smiled and I said, boy, you know, wouldn't that be wonderful? I'd be on Oprah if I could do that. But the reality is, I'm not going to change the relationship with your sibling. But what I can do is put you on the same page of care for a plan for your mom. So in that case, bringing the brother in to start selecting the caregivers where he had involvement was an easy solution, so that he was no longer firing them as he wished just because he felt he didn't have that control.
Wow.
So, in Bayshore, you know, the role of the personal support worker is so vital in terms of either supporting the family caregiver if there is family involved, but many times today, there is no family around. I do a fair amount of work with financial institutions, and an older individual who may be widowed, may not have children, it's very important that there's somebody out there ensuring that their well-being is well looked after. And often what we'll see is there's a distant niece or nephew who's the power of attorney for care, and they have no idea what Aunt Sally needs,
mm-hmm.
or how are they going to manage that. So, you know, a good chunk of our work is also with long-distance carers where they need somebody on-site, available, informing them of the resources and being able to provide what we call that ongoing wellness monitoring to ensure that their loved one is continuing to do well. So families can be complicated, But what we see is that it's important to start the process early in the discussion about wishes and desires, because as you've said, in a crisis situation, choice is lost, choice is removed, and one has to make a decision quickly, i.e., you know, God forbid somebody is unconscious in the hospital and you're called in and the doctor says, so what's your mom's wishes? And you look at your sibling and you say, oh my goodness, I have no idea. You know, what did she say about that? Mm-hmm. Is it a do not resuscitate? Is it not? What were her wishes about going into long-term care? And one of the things I say is don't make promises, right? It's, you know, mom, don't worry, you'll never have to go there. But I urge families to try and not to make promises, yeah, because we do not know what's around the corner. And although most families want to be in their own homes for as long as possible, it's not always possible.
Yeah.
So there is an awful lot of guilt that family members carry around with them when they're struggling with these issues. I promised mom, I promised mom. Right? But this is now outside of anybody's ability to change this. Right? And it could be care needs have exceeded what's available within the home. The home is not accessible, etc. Or it's just too expensive to coordinate the level of care of two attendants, for example, you know, to have it to carry and move, all of those accommodations there where it may not be possible. So whenever possible, try not to make promises because we just don't know if they can be kept.
And it, you know, it's interesting that you say that because I think a lot of people will have that very superficial conversation. Don't put me in a home. But and you know, and then, you know, the easiest thing is to say is yeah, and agree. But that's the opportunity to take it to the next level and to start and carry on that conversation.
Exactly.
But the other thing that I think is really important for people to understand is that you have the ability to remove the personal component by being the third party.
Correct.
And sometimes that really is the best solution. Because now it's not coming from, you know, the family member. It's coming from a healthcare professional that's saying, in the best interest of you, your family, your condition, your safety, your health, whatever, this is, you know, the recommendation. This is the appropriate next step. So,
right.
You know, I think that that's fabulous. One of the other things that you do a lot of is the education and working again with, you mentioned it earlier, with employees and employers. And so tell us a little bit about why that is so important.
Oh, for so many reasons, really for so many reasons. Let me start with the load that carers feel, first of all, the responsibility. If you as a carer are not looking after yourself, then your care recipient will not be managing very well. And so a lot of the education is about respite and supporting the carer. However, there's also a large piece in terms of, in my mind, that the public sector can't do it all and that we'll have to see a greater partnership with the private sector. And so I turn to employers to be able to offer them a way to support their employees of whatever age. It's not just the older employee who's dealing with caregiving issues. No retirement age anymore, and we continue to grow. As you know, we're seeing people celebrating their 80th, 90th, and 100th birthday. And so it's a continuum of care and also intergenerationally. So being able to provide information for resource, for human resources, to have people get a better balance in life. You know, mental health is a huge issue. And the stress that carers feel on top of what's being compounded out in the workforce, perhaps, or for those who might be a little bit younger as part of the sandwich generation, a term you're very well familiar with, you know, the needs of our parents and the needs of our children, and somewhere in the middle, we're squished,
mm-hmm,
right? There's no time for us. So it became a way to provide some extra added resources to organizations. This past year, I was very pleased to be invited by RBC to be their subject matter expert. And and developed for them on their advice center a brand new area called Seniors Finance and Caregiving. And so that's a forum available to the public 24 hours a day, 6 videos and a number of articles on things that people are going through. Because we all have parents, and if you still have a parent, they're getting older regardless. Yep. This is going to happen. This is one of the inevitabilities of life. So this is a website under RBC Advice Center, Key Life Moments, Seniors Finance and Caregiving, that is an easy way to inform yourself. So when you're ready to start the conversation with your family or with your employer, if in fact that's the area of, hey, I'm not managing, I need some flex time, or I need to be able to work from home, but also, how do I know when it's time to intervene, and how do I do that, and what's the difference between a retirement or a long-term care? So again, it's being able to provide that information to families and organizations so that they can be better informed, which will hopefully improve everybody's lifestyle and productivity.
And, you know, so it is true. It's education is extremely important. Understanding and having the ability to find something, a reliable resource, is a great benefit. So that's fantastic that you're able to do that and share that with us as well. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, let's talk a little bit about some of the things that you do as an expert witness. So be sure to stay tuned. And welcome back to Here's to Your Health, where we connect community to care. And we're speaking with an individual who is really providing a great resource for us as baby boomers, the sandwich generation, those of us who are family caregivers, if we're caring for elder or aging parents, which I think all of us are, unless somebody has found that the secret sauce. When we talk about elder caring and we talk with Audrey Miller, we're really understanding how the benefit of utilizing a healthcare professional, someone to come in and be that third party, be that individual who can help bring things to the table, open up the conversation, and keep that conversation targeted. Because a lot of times when family gets together and they talk about health issues or what's going on with mom and dad, you tend to go off on that tangent. I think that, you know, it's interesting that you have the ability to go and be recognized as subject experts and expert witnesses. And so tell us a little bit about, you may not be able to get into the nitty gritty, but, you know, if you can share some of the success stories and some of the work that you do being an expert witness in court, because, you know, maybe some folks may find that a benefit if they're in a situation where, you know, they need somebody to speak on their behalf or get that point across or understand truly, you know, what may have happened.
Thank you. You know, so much of the time, Jackie, one is trying to avoid going to court. So being an expert witness is at the end of that continuum. The hope is getting somebody such as myself or, you know, another professional who has those skills in early enough to be able to settle the situation without the costly expense of court. So the work that we do with lawyers, for example, is. And what I've coined is something called a functional living assessment. So it's the ability to be able to go into a particular setting and determine what that client's care needs are. So what we see, especially within estates and the estates world, estates and trusts, is that, as I said earlier, families are complicated and there are disputes, usually between the siblings, where one might be holding a power of attorney for care and the other might be holding a power of attorney for finance, or they're both a power of attorney for one or the other and they're in conflict. And so what happens is that each side stops speaking to one another and each side believes they know what is best for mom. And this can continue for a period of years, actually, while they are fighting. So we get called in to go into the setting, and the setting might be a person's own home. It could be a long-term care facility, which has now become their home on an interim basis. and I've seen that, where the fighting has resulted in placement in a long-term care facility, and that might have been the issue, that one family wanted mom home and another member of the family wanted mom placed. So it's trying to determine what is it the mom needs. So it's a comprehensive assessment in terms of looking at, of course, safety is always number one. Function and safety is always number one. But we're looking, in addition to the physical setup, we're assessing the emotional function, the cognitive function, the caregiving issues. What is care going to look like? How much care is required? What is the care going to cost? And what's the best way to have it delivered? You know, many times, with enough money, anything is possible. But most of us are not in that situation. Most of us don't have $500 a day to be able to pay for 24-hour care, $24, $25 an hour around the clock for a long time, especially if we're dealing with a senior who may have another 20, 30, 40 years ahead for them. And sadly, you know, often what I have seen is that the fighting is about money. There's often an element of money and how money is being spent, or if money is being spent while mom is still alive, that means there'll be less for an inheritance. So it becomes very, very complicated. The functional living assessment is a document that is then used to answer the question, what does mom require? And what are the options? I mean, each request may be a little bit different, but what are the other options that are available to her? And sometimes we'll be asked to cost those options, or other times we may be given a budget to say this is how much is available on a monthly basis. How can that best be used to respect mom's wishes, to live A, B, C, or D, and to ensure that she's continuing to be healthy? The other kind of court order that we have seen is supervision orders. And it is when the conflict is such that visitation, almost like children's aid, my very first job out of school was as a children's aid worker, and where I had to supervise custodial visits between estranged parents with the child. Not so dissimilar, it's supervising visits with family members, being able to visit the older individual who is no longer capable. And we haven't touched on the issue of capacity, but it's often that becomes the case when the older person is no longer capable and that there is concern that they may say something or they may sign something that they should not be doing. So it's a matter of having the visit supervised by one of our social workers to ensure that everybody remains safe and that nothing is being done untoward that should not be.
There's a lot of depth there. There really truly is, and people need to know, and they should know that there is help. Before we go, just tell us a little bit about the e-caring channel and your initiative with engaging younger generations, because I think that is an extremely important piece, because it's the younger generation that ultimately is going to be caring for us when it comes to that time.
Right, you are. Thank you. The e-caring channel is my YouTube site, and I invite you to take a look. There are a number of little video blogs that I've done on a whole range of topics, like hiring a personal support worker or choosing a retirement setting or why our parents refuse our help and going to doctor's appointments, those kinds of things. But the very first video that I did was in partnership with the Vanier Institute for the Family, who had completed research out of UBC. Dr. Grant Charles is the professor who did this research study. And what he found was that in these high schools in Vancouver, that over 12% of respondents, young people, identified themselves as being young caregivers. And this is above and beyond what is typical for any family member. And what we know from further research is that children as young as 6 are providing care, meaning they are perhaps the one who is trying to ensure that, obviously there's an age-appropriate issue, so the 6-year-old isn't going to be doing the same things that a 16-year-old is going to be doing. But this was important research to highlight the plight of, in this case, high school students who were giving a tremendous amount of time and energy and of themselves before coming to school every day. So we talked a little bit about depression. I mean, trying to get mom or dad off the couch and involved, or ensuring that grandmother or grandfather is getting their medication or going to doctor's appointments, or even ensuring that food is on the table in some cases. So I hired my my son's friend, actually, who is a rapper who's well-known in Canada, who was a caregiver and continues to be a caregiver to both of his grandmothers. And he did a wonderful rap video, really trying to reach out and provide education. And so the purpose of this video was about education, to help really everybody understand that there's an entire hidden community of carers out there who are starting at a very young age, and to give them some recognition and some support. So it was very well received. I was thrilled. We had 1,000 hits in a day, and we're well over 6,000 hits now. But what it did is that it also worked with helping the ball continue to roll. And so Action Canada got a funding grant and was able to do a more thorough job in terms of research and provide a perspective of where Canada can go in terms of awareness and multi-sectoral involvement about offering supports and resources for these young individuals and their families so that their issues can be acknowledged and the support and education provided to those involved. So thank you for bringing that out. I mean, this is the video is called Lucky the Young Carer Rap, and it's on my website under video channels under the Caregiver Project. And I'm actually going to speak this weekend to a group of Elementary Teachers Federation, and I'll be showing the video because teachers have such an important role to play in supporting all of the students, but appreciating that the students that come in the morning may have had a very hard night dealing with caregiving issues that have impacted how they study and how they approach every day.
Mm-hmm. Well, Audrey, thank you so much for doing what you do. And so if there are people out there that, you know, would want to take a look at that video or learn more about your organization, how can they do that?
www.eldercaring.ca. I have a toll-free number of 1-866-473-8887. Or the head office is in Toronto, 416-658-8887. I invite you to the eCaring YouTube channel, or Twitter, Elder Care Expert at Twitter. And I'm also a regular blogger at allaboutestates.ca. So a few forums for you. Thank you, Jackie.
Well, thank you again, Audrey. And, you know, we'd love to hear more of your success stories. So maybe in the future we can bring you back. And hophopully with our lovely weather we're having, that you stay warm. And we will definitely connect either through social media or in person again.
Thank you very much, Jackie.